Well, hey, how are y'all? Woohoo! Okay. Right. It's like 20 degrees out when you woke up this morning. I get it. My voice is a little gruff this morning because of that and because of allergies. So if you hear it squeak, that's why, okay? My name's Carter. I'm one of the pastors here. Super thankful that you guys are joining us today. Welcome, whether you're here in person or joining us online. Thank you so much for being here. Before we get started, though, today in our sermon, I just want to call attention to the inviter cards that are on your seats that are there. There's two little inviter cards for Easter. Man, I'm getting super excited about this. It's only a few weeks away. I mean, Easter is right around the corner, and we're going to host a family fun day on the Saturday before Easter, April 8th. We're going to do it down at River's Edge Park near Carillion. It's going to be really fun, so make sure that you're inviting your friends and your family and your coworkers. It's going to be an awesome time for families and all of that, but also then, of course, make sure you invite them to the Easter service on April 9th. It's going to be a really great time. We're going to talk about Jesus above all from Colossians chapter 1. He's going to be above anything else that we can think will make us happy or give us purpose or meaning. It's going to be a straight-up gospel message for people so that you can bring your non-believing neighbors in with you or your nominal Christian neighbors, people who say that they're Christians but and they've grown up in church all their lives, but they probably don't follow Jesus at all. So it's going to be a great time for that because the sermon's just going to be directed toward people believing who Jesus is. You can visit our webpage there. It should be on a slide for you, redemptionroanoke.com/Easter, so you can find out more about all of that. There's digital shareables on there for you social media folks. Like I said, I'm not on social media, so I couldn't care 2 cents about sharing anything on social media, so it's really great for me. I'll invite people, you know, the old-fashioned way by telling them and handing them the card. But if you want digital shareables, it's on there. You can also go on there and sign up to serve. You know, these things don't just happen on their own. We need you all to actually serve at those things so that people can be invited in and we can show them hospitality in a really good and meaningful way. And so get on there and sign up to serve. We have a few big days out of the year that we can utilize to do this, and this is one of those big days for us. You know, we want to be a go-and-tell kind of church. That's what this sermon series called Bless is all about, is that you live on mission in your life. You go and tell people about Jesus. But there are a few days where we can say, hey, come and see. And that's what Easter is, still in our cultural context, even as post-Christian as we are, and even as, you know, crazy as Roanoke can seem at times, people will still come to church if you invite them on Easter. And so this is that time for us to say, hey, come and see what God's doing here, and come and see what he's done in my life. And so I hope you guys will take advantage of that. Don't waste this opportunity this season to do that. Take those inviter cards and start inviting people. All right, so that's my pitch for Easter. Now, let's just get into it for today. Let me catch you up if you're new or you missed a week. We're in a series called Bless, the Mission of Everyday Life. And we wanted to do this series because so often I think we all feel ill-equipped to live out our faith and share it in a meaningful way with other people. But our mission is to lead a restless culture to the redeeming Savior. That's how we say it here at Redemption Church. And we can't just long for people's redemption. We actually have to lead them to it, if that makes sense. When we follow Jesus, we will lead people to Jesus. We're his ambassadors in the world. We're his hands and feet. That's our job. So what does that look like? Well, if we want to be like Jesus, it looks like blessing people around us. And so far, we've talked about what blessing others looks like. It starts with beginning with prayer. That's how it begins. You got to begin with prayer always because God's the one who saves. And then last week, we talked about listening to our neighbors, to connect with our neighbors, listening with intentionality. Listening well is loving well. And now today we're going to talk about eating with purpose. And so we'll be in Matthew chapter 9, verses 9 through 13, if you want to turn there or find it on your device and follow along here in just a minute. But if you're like me, ever since you heard about this Blessed series and you realized that E stood for eating, this was the day, right? This was the one. Okay, can I get an amen here? Huh? Hello, right? This is the day I've been looking forward to. We're talking about eating with our neighbors. I mean, how cool is that to have that as our sermon application for today? It's like the easiest possible, the best possible sermon application you will ever have in your life. Pray for people, listen to people, but then it can't get any better than eating with people, right? I mean, it's seriously. I know in our American culture in general, food is a big deal for us, especially if you're a millennial like me. I don't know why, but we fancy ourselves as food snobs if we're millennial, even though we grew up eating Pop-Tarts and you know, Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I'm not sure how that developed into like becoming foodies here as millennials, but we are. And so I was pleasantly surprised when we moved back to Roanoke 2.5 years ago to see that there are some really good restaurants in Roanoke. Surprisingly, I don't know why, because I grew up in Roanoke and there were not that many good restaurants. But when we came back, man, there's a ton here now. Farm to table, millennials love that stuff, right? It's hipster's haven. I mean, we know that that farm to table stuff is just the greatest stuff, right? So we got Bloom and we've got Local Roots and we've got Sidecar and probably there's others that I don't even know about here in Roanoke. But man, I think we just got good food in general in Roanoke. I mean, I think about Billy's downtown. If you've ever eaten there, it's great, great American fair food, a good steak there. Frankie Rowland's, I've never been, but I've heard it's really good. Jack Brown's for burgers. Anybody else? Jack Brown's, right? You can get the macaroni and cheese and barbecue chips on the burger. I mean, it's phenomenal. Grace's Pizza. Grace's Pizza, you know, great New York-style pizza. Love Grace's Pizza. But let me tell you, the best Indian food I've ever had, I preach this gospel all the time, so if you've been around at all, you know Nawab Indian cuisine downtown is the best Indian food I've personally ever had. And I've had Indian food in quite a few different places around the country. It's the best. You need to go there. But we got good sushi here. We got great coffee. That falls under food, right? Got great coffee shops here in Roanoke. But maybe the best of all, Blue Cow ice cream. Can I get an amen on that one too? Hello, that's the best ice cream I've ever had. I'm telling you, right here in Roanoke, Virginia, it's great. And I am an ice cream connoisseur, I will tell you that. So I've had a lot of different ice creams. And now everybody's like, man, why are you talking about this? We're ready to let's go eat lunch. You know, I'm ready. It's 10:30, but I'm hungry. You're salivating right now. I get it. I am too. I'm ready to go. We'll see from Matthew's story today, though, that while I'm sure Jesus loved food as well, like all of us do, he actually used eating with others as one of the most powerful tools to build relationships and share the gospel with them. Remember last week, we said that people are the mission. So even food becomes subservient to that mission of loving others and blessing them in our lives and blessing them as our neighbors. We all have to eat though, right? So why not leverage the meals that we have for the sake of the mission? This is our main point for today. If you're taking notes, you want to write this down. To bless our neighbors, we should eat with them. So I like to try to put it on the slide as a way to apply it to yourself so that when you write it down, I should eat with my neighbors. That's the application point for today. If I want to bless them, I should eat with them. In Luke's gospel, he mentions it at least 10 times that Jesus ate with people, several of whom weren't people that you'd expect a Jewish rabbi to be seen with, much less sit down and eat with and spend time with. See, eating with people back in Jesus's day was a huge deal. I still think it probably is today more than we even make it out to be, but especially for Jewish folks at this time, it was an expression of who you associated with. Who were your people? Who were the people that you wanted to be around and that you wanted to be known with? See, all Jews who followed the Old Testament law of Moses, they wouldn't eat with anybody who was, according to the law, unclean. You know, so if they ate with somebody, it was usually because they followed God like that Jewish person did. So it was their people. They ate with people that they were associated with. So the fact that in our story today, Jesus would go and eat with Matthew, who was a tax, he was Jewish, but he was a tax collector. So he was essentially a traitor to Jewish people. And Matthew's friends, who were probably Romans. The Jews considered them sinners, we'll see in the text today. Man, that's a huge deal that Jesus would do this. So he's breaking down barriers here. And the religious elite hated that. And they had a lot to complain about it, you know? So let's just go ahead and read the story here from Matthew chapter 9, starting in verse 9, and then we'll talk more about it. This is what it says, starting in verse 9. As Jesus went on from there, so he'd been in Capernaum, so he's moving on from Capernaum, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax office, probably right outside of town, and he said to him, "Follow me." And he got up and he followed him. While he was reclining at the table in the house, which from the other Gospels in Mark and Luke, we know that this is Matthew's own house, many tax collectors and sinners came to eat with Jesus and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" Now when he heard this, he said, "It is not those who are well who need a doctor, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I didn't come to call the righteous, but sinners." All right, so Matthew was a tax collector, we've gathered, which meant that he was a Jew working for the Roman government. Now, as long as the tax collectors would give to the Roman government what the Roman government asked for, they could take as much money as they wanted from their own people. So they worked on behalf of the government, and they could just steal whatever they wanted to make a profit. That was kind of the way that things were at the time. They could tax people anything. And so basically Matthew was probably on the road here taxing the travelers that were going in and out of Capernaum, whatever he so desired. He didn't even have to be consistent about it. And so most tax collectors, like Matthew, weren't welcome in synagogues. They couldn't join their people on the Sabbath. They were shunned by their own tribe of people. They weren't welcomed in their families or their homes anymore. And they were generally despised by everybody because they were thieves and traitors to the Jews, their own people. But then they were seen as dogs by the Romans because the Romans looked down on the Jews. And so they weren't really claimed by anybody here. Becoming a tax collector, they essentially became cultureless. It was very much tied to racism, obviously. They were in a majority culture as a minority working for the majority. And because of their position, neither group would claim them. I recently heard a black pastor that I know in a fairly multi-ethnic but probably majority white church explain it just like that for himself. Because he's not in a black church context, in the eyes of his friends and family, he's sold out to the white people, right? That's how they look at it. So they call him an Uncle Tom sometimes. That's how he feels. That's what people will say. He feels somewhat shunned by his own culture, his own ethnicity, his own tribe, if you will. But because he's a black man in a majority white culture, he's not really at home in the white culture either. You know, not that he's ever experienced any overt racism necessarily from his brothers and sisters, maybe some implicit bias, you know. But he said it just makes him feel lonely sometimes. And so when he meets somebody who's like him, it's a really special moment. Because they can commiserate and they can understand. And that's likely what Matthew was going through here, right? Leading up to this moment, it's likely that he was very lonely because he was looked down on by everybody because of his ethnicity and because of his position in the Roman government. And then when Jesus comes along, he offers him acceptance, but also somebody who can understand what he was going through. Because Jesus, being Jewish, he was starting to be shunned by the religious folks. Okay, they started to see that this wasn't a normal rabbi that they really wanted to be around, as evidenced by the question that they asked his disciples here. But also, he's Jewish, so the Romans are looking down on him because he's Jewish. So Jesus comes along and identifies with Matthew. He finds that common ground, and Matthew, all of a sudden, is accepted. Matthew, all of a sudden, can become part of a family, and Jesus understood his situation. So you can imagine how special it would be for Matthew to meet somebody in this kind of way who understood what he was feeling, because here he was, a guy who really, by the world's standards, had everything. He was wealthy, because he'd kind of stolen some of that stuff, right? But he was wealthy. He had the things of this world that we normally think of, success and all of that, and his career and everything. And yet he probably felt pretty empty inside and very lonely until he met Jesus for the very first time. So Matthew wrote this in his own gospel account, no doubt, because he was fond of recalling that moment that Jesus spoke to him and called him by name and asked him to follow him. Let me just say, Christian brother or sister, today, before we go any further, do you remember when you were called by Jesus to follow him? Is that a moment that you remember? Do you remember what it felt like for you if you followed Jesus? And it's good to reflect on that every so often, I think, because it reminds us of the miracle of salvation that God did in our own lives, that we were dead in our sin, and then Jesus came along and breathed life into us in a new way, and it changed everything about our lives. It changed how we view things, how we do things. It changed everything. And remembering our story should give us some of that encouragement that we need to remind us of how good God really is, but also it reminds us of our constant need for him, right? Jesus says here in verse 13, he came to save sinners, people who know that they're sinful, not people who think that they're righteous. So remembering our own story can help keep us humble in that. That's humility. Where we realize we have a need that only he can meet. I'm not saying you have to recall an exact moment of salvation or anything like that. If you didn't have one of those radical conversion moments like some people do, maybe you do have that story, maybe you don't. But you do have a story if you're a Jesus follower. Everybody has a story, some kind of story. Can you recall that? Can you remember that today? You know, we'll talk more about sharing our story with others in a few weeks here as we end out the Blessed Sermon series. But here, Matthew's recounting his own story. He's remembering it for himself. He remembers Jesus coming along and changing everything to the point that, as we see in Luke's account of this, when Jesus calls Matthew, he says that Matthew leaves everything. He leaves it all. He lays it all down, all the greed, all the wealth, his career, everything. He lays it all down, and he follows Jesus. He gave up that life because he saw that Jesus was better. Do you remember that moment that you saw Jesus was better if you follow him? See, in that moment, he was repenting of that old lifestyle when Matthew did that. When he followed Jesus, he left it all. He left the tax booth, and he went out and he followed him. He was repenting of that old life that he had been living, that old life of rejecting God. And then he committed to follow Jesus for the rest of his days with all of himself. So let me just ask you, maybe you're not a Christian here today. Maybe you don't follow Jesus. Have you followed him? Ask yourself that. Have you laid down your life and given it all over to Jesus? Maybe you can't recount a story of following him because you don't have one. And that's okay. We're glad you're here, but you can if you simply believe in him today. If you listen to his call through his word being preached to you even now and realize that he wants you to follow him. Believe that he's made you right with God, like Matthew believed. Jesus lived the perfect life that you're supposed to live, but you never will. And then he died the death that you deserve for rejecting God. He died in your place. Think about Matthew's situation here. He turned on his own people. He was taxing them unfairly. He was gaining wealth by being greedy. He wanted more and more, and he was willing to bulldoze anybody to get it. See, that kind of lifestyle is not God's best for Matthew or for anyone. He was rejecting God's design for his life. He wasn't loving his neighbors. He was using them. And see, that kind of lifestyle deserves death. It deserves God's judgment. And it's like that for all of us. I mean, we cheat, we steal, we lie, we lust, we hate people, we have pride, we commit murder in our heart. I mean, we've rejected God in one of those ways or all of those ways or in some other way, and we deserve his judgment in our life as well. But that's not what happened for Matthew, and that's not what has to happen for you if you follow Jesus. Because Jesus took that judgment and that punishment onto himself, and he exchanged our sinful life for his perfect life. So that when we believe in him and follow him, God will look at us now and see Jesus' perfection in our place. That's the gospel that we believe as Christians. And then Jesus did something miraculous. He rose from the dead so that, like Matthew, we can live with God forever and sit at his table in eternity with him, face to face. Matthew was willing to leave all of his life behind, all of his wealth, all of his career, everything, and he took a step of faith, believing that Jesus was better, believing that Jesus's lifestyle, following Jesus and doing what Jesus did and loving Jesus and being with Jesus, he believed that all that was better. Jesus is calling you to do that now if you have never done that. If you haven't made that decision to follow him, don't wait. Now is the time. If you've been coming around our church for a few weeks or a few months or listening online or something like that, and you've started following him, man, make sure people know that today. Make sure people know that in your life. If you've really started following Jesus, then you won't be ashamed to tell people that you follow Jesus. Come forward and talk to one of us today. Come forward and talk to one of our prayer counselors at the end of the service. Or you can do this too. If you really need a step of anonymity right now, you can email hello@redemptionroanoke.com. Especially if you're joining us online and you've been listening and you've become a believer. Because you need to be able to tell people that you follow Jesus. You can't be a Christian and be afraid to share that with people. I mean, Matthew, we saw it through a dinner party. He wanted everybody to know, right? And it's highly likely that Jesus' disciples were baptized like he was. It never says in the text, it's really interesting that it never says his disciples were baptized, but we can kind of infer that they were. And so that's really our first step of obedience as a Jesus follower. When you start following Jesus, when you see people in the Bible and the New Testament believe, it's always followed by a step of baptism. You go through and read Acts, it's always believe and then be baptized, believe and be baptized, because baptism is an outward symbol of an inward reality that we've been changed, that we now follow Jesus, and we want to take that step of obedience in our lives. We say it's the first step of obedience because we see it in the Bible that way. You believe, and then you share it with the world through this symbolic gesture of baptism. And so I would really encourage you, we're going to have in 1 month a baptism service here on Sunday morning. It's going to be the week after Easter. Now, right now, we don't actually have anybody scheduled for baptism. But we're going to do that hoping and believing that God has changed some of you and is calling you now to take that step of obedience to follow him for the rest of your life and to share it with the world. Because we can use that service as a celebration so that you can invite your friends and family and they can know the same Jesus that you now know. Man, it's a really cool time. We're going to make it huge. It's going to be awesome. And we're praying that God will bring people to be baptized. Now, if he doesn't, he doesn't. But I'm believing that he can, and I believe that there's probably some of you here that need to take that step of obedience now in your life. So believe, then get baptized. That's what we see throughout the New Testament. You can go to redemptionroanoke.com/baptism. If you want to sign up for baptism now, that's your step. Go do that. You can tell one of our prayer counselors down front at the end of the service about that as well. They'll help you there. We'll talk more about this in the coming weeks, but man, just don't wait. That's my call to you today. Matthew didn't wait. He responded immediately. He left everything and he followed Jesus. Man, do that too if you haven't yet. But then we see that Matthew ate with Jesus, and then he threw this dinner party, and this is where it starts getting fun because he wanted his friends to meet the same Jesus that he'd met, right? And so he started inviting them around so they'd get around Jesus. And that's what's so awesome about Jesus. I love Jesus in this. I mean, the first miracle that he performed was at a wedding reception where he turned water into wine so the party could keep going. He loved to eat with people, right? One of his best known miracles was feeding 5,000 plus people on a hillside because they'd all come out to hear him preach. He had a pretty significant meal with his disciples in the upper room before he was crucified. That's why we celebrate communion every week, you know? And then after his resurrection, what did he do with his disciples on the beach? He cooked fish and ate with them. I mean, this is who Jesus is. He loved to eat, but he used those meals to bless other people in his life. Why? Well, because there's a whole theology behind it, actually. If you go through the Bible and look at why people eat together and have feasts and have parties, it's because there's something joyful in eating. There's something celebratory in eating with one another. That's why the Pharisees got mad at Jesus for eating with sinners. In their mind, quote, sinners, right? Because they thought eating with somebody celebrated those people and their sinful lifestyle. But listen now, Jesus wasn't about celebrating a sinful lifestyle, was he? He loved people, but he set himself apart. What he was doing by eating with them wasn't celebrating their sin. He was celebrating how God had made a way to deliver them from their sin. Does that make sense? He didn't celebrate them and their sin. He celebrated how they would be delivered from their sin. That's what eating represented throughout all of the Old Testament. Just think about the feasts that Israel would observe to celebrate and commemorate various things God did for his people in the Old Testament. Passover celebration, for example, right? That was a feast that commemorated God saving Israel and delivering them from oppression in Egypt. The Feast of Weeks, another example, commemorates Israel's time out in Mount Sinai in the wilderness when God's very presence descended upon the mountaintop. And he gave the law to Moses, and then he had all of the elders come up and guess what? Eat with him in his presence. And then we studied Esther in the fall. You remember that? She instituted a feast called Purim to commemorate how God delivered his people from the Persian Empire, from the death of Haman. You remember this? Man, all these feasts and more that Israel celebrate commemorates God's presence and his deliverance for his people. I mean, that's what eating was for the Jewish people, and that's what it can now be for us. Jesus is showing us that that's what eating can do, and that's why he ate as well with people. He came eating with, quote, sinners, so much that the religious hypocrites would call him a drunk and a glutton, but it was to really celebrate God's presence and his deliverance for those sinners. That's the beauty of what Jesus did. He came to fulfill all of these different things. So you can write this down if you're taking notes as well. Jesus was using meals to point to his own mission in the world. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, we saw that in the sex, marriage, and singleness series, right? Sex can do that. It can point us to God in that way. It's a symbol of God wanting intimacy with us. That's what marriage does, sex and marriage. But man, now eating? I mean, we're talking about some good stuff this year, okay? That's all I'm gonna say. 2023 is the year for us, okay? I mean, eating with people can reveal the gospel to them in some kind of way. It's a beautiful thing. Jesus wanted to show the religious hypocrites that they needed to stop worrying about sacrifices, he says, because they thought that that would save them, give them brownie points with God, and start worrying about showing mercy to their neighbors instead. Showing mercy in a way that God had shown mercy to those who see their need. Not people who think they're righteous, but people who know they're sinners. I mean, in verse 13, he said, go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. See, he was paraphrasing Hosea chapter 6, verse 6, where God was talking about Israel's hardened hearts. And he was saying he wants that relationship, not the religion, right? It's like we talked about a couple of months ago in our vision series. It's who over do. It's not that do is never important. Do comes later. The do, you know, like doing all the stuff, trying to be like Jesus, that comes later, but it's got to be in the right order. You got to get the order right or it gets all wonky and it gets wrong and it's a false gospel. It's who over do. Jesus came to save people, not to make you, you know, do all the right things. He came to save people who are sinners and broken, who are willing to see their need for him, not people who think that they're holy and righteous already by what they do. People who know that they're sick, not people who think that they're well. So many Christians in America live in country club Christianity, and they seem to think that they're now better than everybody else because they believe all the right things and they do all the right things now. But listen, that's a total misunderstanding of the gospel if that's where you're at. Real Christians see how much worse they are than everybody else, but how much Jesus has done already to save them. And that's where they live. That's where their joy comes from. Now, I know I mentioned this last week, but it's worth mentioning again. When you say that you follow Jesus, but you can't even be in the same room with, much less eat with somebody that you disagree with, or that you think is a, quote, sinner, man, you can't follow Jesus of the Bible. That's not how Jesus rolled. That's not how he lived his life. Because he doesn't desire sacrifice, but mercy. He doesn't desire performance. It's not what he wants. He wants your heart. He wants you to have a heart for him and for other people. Jesus' Sermon on the Mount proves that. He showed you that you have a blackened heart. Your heart will never be perfect. He wants you to give it to him so that he can transform it over the course of your life. He doesn't desire your performance. He desires mercy. You can look okay on the outside and do all the right things, but still have a wicked and hateful and prideful and sinful heart on the inside toward both God and toward others. He desires mercy, he says. He desires that we treat one another with mercy. The people in our culture, as wicked as it is, we treat them with mercy and love and dignity and respect because they do bear God's image in a certain way, as his image bearers in the world. He wants a heart that loves God and loves others. And everything then what you do will flow from that. Can we see the culture's wickedness as an opportunity rather than a threat? Can we see it as an opportunity for mercy rather than a threat to our, quote, holiness? Because listen, if our holiness comes from Jesus, then our holiness is secure. That's not a problem for God. But whether we're showing mercy to people or not is. And before I go any further, let me just say this to you guys, because I feel like I came down hard last week. Maybe that sounds hard to you. I just want to let you guys know that our church is really doing this well. I feel like I look around and I see our church showing mercy to people. And I love that. I want to encourage you guys. I want to say thank you for doing that and showing Jesus' love to people. Because I'll tell you what, every new person that I've ever heard come into this place, that is the one thing that they say sets us apart from other churches they visited, is that somebody spoke to them and made them feel like they were at home. And if nobody's spoken to you and you're new here, I'm sorry. I hope that they will before you leave. But I'll tell you what, I think that we're doing that really well. And I don't want to just pat ourselves on the back just so that you feel good about yourself. I just want to encourage you guys in that. And I want us to keep going. That's why we're doing the Blessed series that we're in right now, so we can do that even more intentionally. So we can invite people into our homes or invite people into our lives and share meals with them and serve them, as we'll talk about next week, and then share God's story with them. And so I'm really looking forward to what he's going to do at Easter here, because I really believe he's going to use that hospitality that we have to share the story of Jesus' love with your neighbors through you. So just like Jesus, we can use eating with people to share that love, to share that mercy that he's talking about here. So we can eat with people to show them how much we care about them. You can write that down as well if you're taking notes. When we eat with people, we show them we care. So if you sit down and eat with somebody, it shows them how much you care. Eating, like I said before, I think is more important than we even make it out to be, you know, because it breaks down barriers with people. We can sit across the table with somebody and show them that they have value. Last week, we talked about how listening to people demonstrates how valuable people are. Rather than just talking at people, we want to listen to them. Well, that's what eating does, because it spends meaningful time with somebody. That's why I think it's important for families to spend meaningful time at the dinner table. That's why the dinner table is becoming a thing that people go back to. It's because that's meaningful time that you spend with your family, with your kids, and all of that. And the same thing is true of our neighbors. If we're going to spend meaningful time with them, we ought to eat with them, because meaningful, because you're not, you know, on your phone while you're eating, hopefully. It's very unhealthy if you're doing that, right? most of the time, unless it's a special, you know, pizza and movie night, we're not eating in front of the TV. We don't have things in front of us. We're there with one another at the table, spending that meaningful time with one another, talking to one another. Eating actually gives us a great opportunity to even listen to people and to apply what we learned last week, right? Because then you can get good at asking questions while you're eating and let them talk. Let their food get cold while you eat up the good food, right? That's what you can do. You can learn how to do that in a meaningful way while you're eating. Tamara and I did this with our neighbors recently, and it was awesome. They're pretty new to our neighborhood and pretty new to Roanoke, so we invited them over for dinner just to try to bless them and love them. And Tamara made a really good meal. If you don't know, she's a really good cook. She made a really good dessert, and then she just peppered them with questions. And so did I. We just talked, we peppered, and hopefully in a good way, right? Not like, hey, what about this? No, we tried to ask them questions to make them feel cared for and loved, like we were interested in them, because we were. We didn't know who they were, where they came from. And then when they start sharing where they came from Texas, and oh, well, that's cool. That brings up a whole new line of questioning that I want to know. I'm curious to know, you know? And so we asked them questions and tried to make them feel the care that we actually have for them as our neighbors. And since then, it has broken down some barriers. They text us now. We text back and forth. They've brought us some food. The wife there, she's also a really good cook. That's actually what she does for a living. So it's really good to have that camaraderie now. We've broken down some barriers just by eating and listening. Now, we hope that we can start to apply this blessed model to them and start serving them in a tangible way and then share the story of the gospel with them. We haven't gotten there yet. We're still in the blessed model right now. We're still taking steps there. So eating with people can be a part of starting that relationship and showing someone that you care. But I know that as soon as we look at the text like this and we start having some stuff go through our mind, yeah, that was Jesus, but that's Jesus. He's the Son of God. He's God incarnate, okay? I'm not Jesus, right? I'm glad that you feel that way and that you have that humility in your life. But Jesus did do this so that we would follow him, okay? Maybe you say things like, well, I struggle to disagree with people. I struggle to be around people that I disagree with. I struggle to host people in my home. I don't like to do that, or whatever we do. And really what I'm saying is we make excuses, right? We're going to make excuses for this. Well, let's see if we can tackle three big ones. It's actually in the Bless book, which I don't know if we have any more for sale out now or not, but it's Bless, B-L-E-S-S, okay, by a guy named Dave Ferguson. You can look this up and purchase one. It's really good. He covers some of these excuses in that book as well. And then I'll close out our time together after we go through these. But the first excuse that we might make is, well, I don't cook. Okay, well, you know, right. I mean, I don't cook either. All right. I mean, my wife does. And you're like, well, I'm not married. I don't cook and I'm not married. Well, listen, maybe you have a tiny apartment. Maybe you can't cook. And I get that. But notice what happened in this story with Jesus. Did he cook and was he in his own home? Okay, no. So why do we automatically apply that to ourselves and say, well, Southern hospitality, you know, gotta entertain, right? I mean, geez, that is not the life that we have to live, okay? You don't have to entertain anybody when people come over to our house. I mean, we got toys, we got dog hair. I mean, it's there. We try to clean up, try to make it look nice, but that's not always the case. It's okay, right? You could be like Jesus here and invite yourself over to somebody's house, all right? I'm giving you permission to do that. But that is exactly why it's helpful to be in a community of believers as well, right? You might not cook, you might have a tiny apartment, but somebody else in our church does know how to cook and they have a big house. You can utilize that and say, hey, brother or sister, I need to invite my non-believing neighbor over so that, man, we can get around them and be invested in their life. Can you invite us over for dinner? Can I invite them over to have dinner at your house? Man, what a great opportunity to get them around other believers as well, right? So, I mean, start thinking outside, but don't make an excuse like that. You got to get around other believers. You got to help yourself here a little bit. Don't make dumb excuses like I can't cook or I have a tiny house or whatever. Don't let that be an excuse for you. Where you eat doesn't matter. Invite them out to dinner. Invite them to one of those awesome restaurants. Invite them to get Blue Cow if they haven't had it. You know they need to have some Blue Cow in their life. Whatever it is, don't make the excuse. But another excuse is I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. And this is a pretty easy one to tackle too, right? Like we talked about last week, don't say anything. Listen. Learn to listen. Learn to ask good questions. Often we hear people say things like, I struggle to be around people with whom I disagree. Man, learn to be curious about that instead. Why is that threatening? You know you disagree. It's fine. It's okay to disagree with people. Ask them why they believe what they believe. What a great talking point. Ask them to explain the worldview. Start asking them why they follow, you know, Hinduism, or why they're pagans, which is highly likely that you'll find somebody like that in Roanoke, or why they don't go to church anymore. Ask them what happened. Ask them things like that. It's okay to hear what somebody said and not have to respond. Just be like, man, I hate to hear that. Or, oh, okay, I understand. Like, tell me more, you know? It's okay to ask questions. Learn to listen. Don't assume you know where people are coming from. That's what the Pharisees did here, right? In this text, that's exactly what they did. They said, why is your teacher eating with sinners and tax collectors? Well, what's he doing? Insinuating that Jesus was acting questionably. His moral character was in question. But also, they assumed they knew about the sinners, right? The quote, sinners. They assumed some things there, didn't they? And that's why Jesus calls them hypocrites. They thought they knew other people's motives, and they couldn't even see their own motives in their heart were wicked. So learn to ask good questions and listen. Don't make that an excuse. But then the last one here, I don't have time. I don't have time. That's the last excuse you can write down. But I bet you do have time, right? I mean, come on. Seriously, I bet you have 21 times at least. I mean, how many meals do we eat a day? 3, right? I mean, if we're healthy and if it's normal. It should be 3, unless you're a hobbit and you have to have second breakfast and then brunch and all of that. No. Should be 3, right? So how many days in a week are there? 7. So if my math is correct here, you know, I'm not a mathematician, but that should be at least 21 times, right, that we have to eat with somebody that you can use to eat with purpose. I'm just going to tell you to pick 1 or 2. Out of 21 times, just pick 1 or 2 every week to eat with somebody that doesn't know Jesus. And yeah, that means that you have to get to know people who don't know Jesus. That means that you have to be intentional to do that. But remember, begin with prayer. If you don't have somebody in your life that you know is not a Jesus follower, then you need to start praying right now that God will send you somebody in your life. You need to ask him, begin with prayer, and then invite them to eat. Listen to them, ask them questions. You have time. You can be intentional with when you eat. Make sure that you don't use this. I mean, thank God Jesus didn't make excuses with us, right? Thank God he didn't start making excuses and say why he couldn't go to the cross, why he couldn't come into the world. Because now we get to be at the dinner table of the Lamb, the wedding feast of the Lamb with him forever and eternity. Thank God he didn't make excuses with us. And when we start to get that picture of heaven, then it's going to be this big party that we get to eat with Jesus forever and ever and all of the saints. When we start dwelling on that view of heaven as this big meal that we all get to share with one another, I mean, that's going to start to motivate us because that's part of the gospel in our lives. It's going to motivate us to remember what Jesus has done for us. It's going to motivate us to remember our story, to remember that the power of the Holy Spirit is there to change us and help us reach out to others and love them in a tangible way. No one ever got saved because Christians refused to spend time with them. Somebody can't know Jesus if you don't spend time with them. You got to be intentional to get in their life. That's how God saves people. He uses us to share the good news. So leverage your meals as part of blessing others. You want to bless your neighbors? Go eat with your neighbors. Let me pray for us, and then we'll enter into our symbolic meal for the day as well.